The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the fucking difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's gonna win that itch. And I know if I'm gonna have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that itch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face.
Up conversationally, that you have the ability to edit, so I'm not.
Try not to. It's a lot. It makes a lot of work for Ryan, but we try.
But 6 inches
try
is
to,
staying in, yeah. So to speak.
I don't want that taken out. To be clear.
By the way, just a minute.
So do this, man.
What's that?
Let's just do this. What do you have?
All right, we're just gonna go into it.
But, yeah, let's do this.
Okay. Well, sorry, I was gonna tell a random story first.
Tell but, a random yeah. story. If it so sucks, we'll edit it out.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, whatever. We were talking a little bit at the end there about the tyrannical reign that apparently the English people have had on us in terms of measurements and tools and things like that. That they're just like torturing us with six inches is seven
in the UK. Seven, I don't know if you know
seven
that.
Different types of. Apparently, if you have a British motorcycle and a British bicycle in your garage, you might need two different sets of tools. Is what I picked
or
up.
Or an American bicycle.
Yeah. I believe any of the weird British thread pitches and shank sizes and all that. I think the wrenches are kind of all the same, but they are labeled differently.
Oh man! Okay.
So so it's almost like you'd have a special set of wrenches depending on your trade.
Mm. Yeah.
So the
chimney sweeps and the
right.
Well, I guess they wouldn't use wrenches, would
yeah,
they?
Okay. Well, the locomotive mechanic and the bicycle mechanic and the motorcycle mechanic all have like the same thing, but they're all labeled differently.
I believe that's the case. Yeah,
that's really confusing.
It is really confusing and stupid.
So that whole story made me think of it was a recent SNL episode. I don't know if you guys have watched recently or not.
I need to do some catching up.
There was a comedian on. I can't think of his name. He's really funny. Southern gentleman.
Nate Bartsgate. I think that's the one or whatever. Yeah.
And it's whole thing about it's George Washington.
Bargazzi, I think is his name.
It's George Washington's dream. And so it's like they set the scene where it's George Washington.
What is George Washington's dream?
At Valley Forge or whatever. And he's trying to, you know, the troops are in low morale and he goes, but I dream of a nation where we can have freedom and democracy and we can have our own set of like weights and distances and measurements where, you know, we will measure things in feet and inches. And the guy starts to like try and figure out, it's like, and it'll be 12 inches to a foot. And then he goes, oh, okay, excellent. And then we'll be 12 feet to a yard. He goes, if only. It'll be 3 feet will be a yard. And 5,280 feet will be a mile.
But how many hands is it?
And then he does all these great things about like, you know, well, how many yards are in a mile? And he goes, nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's just, he goes on this absolutely great rant about how random our measurements are.
That's great.
You got to check it out. So, yeah.
It'll just make me mad. Well,
welcome to the steering committee where we always round up. We're back with our pal TEDx. We were going to just do a quick, bonus episode with you because we found that it's a good way to, I don't know, upper ratings, basically.
Yes, right. Anything so. I'm on is value added.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. We all know Ted's the biggest deal in all of the front range. 100%. So we know that. So we're going to keep him on as long as we can. So our
question to you in this after hours steering committee episode is, you're a young person. You want to get into the classic car world. What do you, Ted Axe, proprietor, master mechanic, Axe and Allies guy, no, what do you recommend to a young person?
Classic European British sports car guru. That's right. What do you recommend for a young person?
I'm 23 because that's less than half my age, so that qualifies as young. Mm. I've got 10 grand. I would like to get into this scene.
Ooh.
What am I going to buy? It's not going to get me to too much trouble, but I'm going to get that classic British car experience.
Okay, so that's. I'm gonna take a moment to try and not to be a smartass, which is not
Please
my normal.
Please be a smartass.
Well, I was getting there.
It took me 10 minutes just to ask the question.
Yeah, but then I'll go for the smartass question. Yeah. It's like, don't do it while you can. if you're thinking along those lines, you're a dumbass.
Yeah. But if they feel compelled to contribute to your retirement fund by bringing their car to your shop, what should they get?
Shout out Brexit Motoring, right? Because this is the definition of this group theoretical group.
I was just going to say the Brexit kids. I'm kind of fascinated by them because actually, I don't think there's a point of shouting out in any I could do a commercial for the Brexit kids, and who cares? But
yeah.
They are
first
cool.
of all, I just like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course I would like them because I'm the old guy and they're young people that are into the shit that I like, which means that they have endorsed an old guy. And when an old guy is endorsed by young people, that's just awesome. The best episode of The Simpsons is when old Abe Simpson is like sitting around the frickin' lemon tree and somebody says, oh, hey, everybody, an old man's talking. And all the kids just gather at his feet. That is old man utopia. Right there
we go.
So, it's going to be between that and Scarlett Johansson wants to go out with you. One of the two of those things is your pinnacle awesome moment. So thank you, Brexit kids, for being my Scarlett Johansson.
That's a big compliment. That's a big compliment there. Yeah.
And there's our clip right there.
And what I like about the Brexit kids, I don't know why
they're literally half the age of anyone sitting here at this table today.
And what's interesting to me and what I like about them, first of all, individually, they're just like, I could name names and they're just fun. I like hanging out with them, which is weird because I also feel like I'm crashing their parties. Mm. I'm both uncomfortable hanging out with them and I like it because they're just nice people. And what I appreciate is that they are into these old cars in the way that I was into these old cars when I was their age. So guys my age are treating these things like sacred cows and restoring them to perfection and wiping them with diapers. That's a quote from Ferris Bueller, I guess. But treating them as holy grails. And then you got the Brexit kids that are buying these things and they're driving them in the winter.
Yes.
And they're enjoying the use of them the way I did. My Alpine is so rusty these days that you can see the drive shaft from outer space because I drove it in the winter.
We didn't get to that earlier.
And the Brexit kids are doing that. And these cars, the old guys, we got to preserve these for the future. No, you really don't. How many of us know what a thrashing machine is or what it does? Who cares? We're able to get bread and it doesn't freaking matter. So the Brexit kids bringing this.
I've never really seen an old one, and I'm okay with that. Like,
me too.
My life has been okay.
Me too. A lot of the kids that aren't into old cars, their lives are going to be fine as well. But the fact that there is a crowd that does, if they're the ones that actually use up our old shit, if my nice cars go to a Brexit kid and get flogged to death when I'm dead, awesome.
I think that's awesome. I think it's a great attitude towards it. I also think just in general, though, but them driving them and using them, other people will see them.
Yes.
That's worth it. It's worth it if a few of them get used up because
the cream will rise to the top.
More people see them. They're not locked away in a garage. And it's like someone else might get interested in it. So I like that peanut butter.
Thank you, George Washington Carver.
That is kind of the joy of it. Like, this hobby or whatever, it is limited. Someday nobody will care. Mm-hmm. Like cursive and in the meantime, like, to squeeze all the joy that these things have in them before they're all rusted into. Thank you, Brexit kids, for carrying it as far as you're going to go. And if you destroy all of us old man's perfect restorations and our dreams by taking them out and trashing them, bless you.
Yeah.
So
it's a very punk rock attitude about it.
Maybe.
I love it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Now we're back to the. Yeah. Well, I'm the B-52s guy. But
they qualify. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I got off topic. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So back to what they should look at.
Yeah. So the first less obvious answer is that...
But it's a question for them.
It is a question for them. So like... For me, my love of this old stuff, because even I was too old for it when I got into it. For me, it was like too many old spy movies that got me plugged into your, you know, that era. Otherwise, I'd probably have. And actually, my first car was almost a 67 Ford Thunderbird.
Oh,
thank God it wasn't. Yeah. My shop is too small. Yeah. But, it's like, oh no. But, so whatever they're drawn to, and that, you know, I was talking about like watches and cars being forms of industrial art. They are also both a physical manifestation of a piece of history that you can live through. So if you have, if you young person, when I was a kid, I was always fascinated by biplanes and sort of that era. My theme movie was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Yeah. It was only after the spy shit that I got into that all of a sudden I modernized into the 60s. But if the Brexit kids or people like them, if young people identify with a particular time that is their past, that's the vintage car that they should buy. And that might these days, I mean, I bought a 95 Isuzu Rodeo thinking it was modern. It turns out that that's just sort of a shitty classic.
Can you take the top off though, right?
No, I just bought it as a shop truck thinking I was being responsible.
Sorry, that was the Amigo. The Amigo. Yeah, sorry.
The Amigo, which is a predecessor, I think, or it's definitely related to that.
Different pile. Yeah. But, you know,
shit has a thousand eyes, don't forget.
But if as a young person there's a particular period or style that you identify with, then that's what you should go for. Yeah. But some of that stuff is way more difficult than others. Now, as a British car person, and assuming if I was going to advise some young person that was into the same era and same vibe that I am into, which again, thank you, Brexit kids, for being even in that zip code. I'm amazed, shocked, dumb shits. you know, I probably would steer the cars that are accommodated to the best are Triumphs and MGs and Austin Healey's to a point, but the buy-in is higher.
Yeah, right.
But at some point, all of us old geezers that are like worshiping these cars are going to be dead. And Austin, you know, my business model at some point is going to be teaching young people how to use a choke so they can sell their dad's crap. So, so you know, the few kids that still like it, maybe even Healey's, I think Jags are coming down.
Yeah. You know, well, like the XKEs are actually like manageable these days.
Right. Yeah, they're kind of coming down. And with, you know, add inflation, and also all the young people seem to out earn me by a huge margin.
There's that.
So I think, like, I always feel bad for these young kids. I'm like, oh my God, I can't charge them to do this. They're just kids. They can't, you know, whatever. Well, I think if I actually knew, most of them in average McDonald's era jobs are out earning me.
Yeah.
But I'm so kind of inflation proof now that I don't notice. But, you know, pick what you think is cool.
Yeah.
Pick some, especially if you're just putting your toe in the water, get something that isn't going to break you. And that's more likely an MG or a Triumph in the British car world.
Yeah.
Maybe Ford Mustangs and stuff like that are also in that ilk because they're well catered to and they're
big support, big parts.
Right. If you go for the crazy weird shit, if you go for the peerless,
don't jump into the peerless right off the bat.
Right, a lot of times, and the thing is, the problem with people that are into British cars or old European cars, they all like the individuality of it because we're in a country that didn't grow up with that. But if you seek to be the weirdo in a world of weirdos, that has a huge cost.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you have the Armstrong Sidley Star Sapphire, that is a much greater expense worthless car.
Yeah.
You know,
that's an actual car. Cause I'm not familiar with that.
That
one.
Is an actual car. And if you get,
and that means a lot. If we're not familiar with that, that means a lot.
Right. If you get an Austin Princess, whatever, the weirder you go, if you want to be like the weirdest car among weird cars, then you're really shocked. shopping for a car that you can probably buy cheap, but the expense of repairing it will be even more. In other words, being top turd on shit island costs. So, but I find
There's the title of our bonus episode.
top tier on turd island.
Top turd.
That's it. Top turd is what I think.
There we go.
You can edit that into one. And so, you know, the thing is, like, I think of MGs, which are my favorites, but they're also just, they're ordinary, right? All you have to do is raise your hand and you can have one. But yet when you're driving out in the real world and you're enjoying this car the way the Brexit kids do it, it's a crazy weird car and the mainstream population does not relate. And you can be an eccentric weirdo with a cool car on a budget. With those. And they're very fixable and affordable and well catered to. So it depends on the level of weirdness that you're going for. You can be plenty weird among your peers with a very straightforward, in my opinion, car, or you can be the weirdo with a weird
Where does the TVR fall in that?
Now you're in so weird of the weird. So TVR is mechanically
moving up the ladder of the weird of the weird, right?
But somewhat like the Peerless, the TVR is pretty affordable mechanically. The stuff that TVRs are made of, you know, TVR was a small company, so they're buying somebody else's engine, somebody else's transmission, somebody else's suspension.
Do a lot of those have the
fiberglass?
Bodies of fiberglass. A lot of the what they call the Rover V8, but it's actually like based on the Buick V8,
right?
My beloved Rover 3500 that I was cooing about earlier. It's a Buick 215. That's what that really is.
About it. I love it. You're a wordsmith, sir.
But that's one where it's like parts are going to be tough in the United States. Although we do, those ones are relatively well supported in the UK, right? The TVRs. Or not. Maybe I'm wrong.
TVRs, there's enough of them. There's enough of them that if you're willing to dig a little bit, TVRs, I think, are still well supported. Okay. Now, the thing is, with any weirdo car, the stuff that is unique to that car is exponentially expensive.
Yeah.
And the stuff that'll fit your TR6 is, you know, a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
So you know, and that means that the stuff that makes that car unique, the body, the weird aluminum around the doors, which, by the way, because they're glass fiber, I'm sorry, fiberglass, GRP, whatever glass you want to call it.
Fiber RE.
It's
like Jack Sloan, don't forget the E.
That's right. It's because it's British. It has to be weird.
But, you know, by the way, if anybody's interested in a couple of window frames for a TVR, I've got them hanging on the back wall. I've had them for ages because a friend of mine got rid of them, and they don't fit. I mean, they fit the TVR they came out of, but they probably won't fit yours because no two bodies are the same.
Even if it's the exact same model, it might not be.
Exactly. Yeah. Hand built, by the way, just means you know, artisan and shit. None of the parts are, you know, when you hand make something, no two are the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Henry Ford, for automation, interchangeable parts.
Back in 1910.
Yes. Here's your history lesson. Yeah, Henry Ford and Colt revolvers were just magic.
Yeah.
Because all that handmade British stuff is like quaint and adorable, like a thatched roof, but you're still going to have rats falling out of your roof into your bed unless you have a canopy. So there we go.
We've really grounded.
What is the answer? You got $10,000. You're a young person. You want to get into the British car scene or the classic car scene. It was a Ford Mustang or a MGB.
I'm not sure $10,000 gets you a Mustang, but it definitely gets you a great MGB, right?
In the British car world, an MGB is going to be the easy buy-in because they just made too many of them.
And they're decent cars.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
They are awesome cars, well-supported. If you have a nice MGB and you really make it nice, admittedly, that's its own curve. But a nice MGB, you could weld the hood shut and drive it cross-country and not worry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, a Triumph, somewhat less so, but still awesome.
Yeah.
An Austin Healey, if you can get past. Austin Healey, the big Healeys, the 3000s and so on. Mechanically, those things are great. Body-wise, they're kind of, you know, they got that aluminum steel that rusts and they're fussy and they're fettly. But if you get a good one, those three, and Healy's are kind of expensive, but I think they're coming down.
So that's the trifecta.
Nothing MG, wrong with Austin, a rubber bumper. Healey, Jaguars are still a lot of money, but they're coming down, and they're actually good cars compared to, even though people think, oh, Joe, those Jaguars. It's like, nah, what killed Jaguar was stupid Americans owning them. You know, they're actually, they really delivered a lot of bang for the buck. You know, they don't suffer fools gladly. Mm. You can't overheat them. You can't abuse them. But if you take care of a Jaguar, they're great. MGs, great. Triumphs, great enough. Yeah, Austin Healey's pretty great. Yeah, I don't know, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's a sliding curve. It depends on what you buy. Also, and this is an effort to put myself out of business, buy the nicest one you can afford, find the most perfect one ever, pay the guy twice what he's asking for it. You're still going to be money ahead as opposed to getting some fixer-upper. Ooh, I got a deal on it. Now I just have to pay this guy to twirl some screws. No, it's not going to go that way. Yeah. I will break you.
But what kind of screw?
Yeah.
You will be standard screws, it'll be
a screw,
of course.
Yeah. It'll be a screw you're not familiar with.
That costs you extra.
But to your point though, you said like go ahead and just buy the nice one up front.
That's a good rule for life.
Yeah, it's a good rule.
That's true of all cars, I think. Yeah. You know?
But it's like there's going to be some maintenance in general in anyways, but you want to like this car. You want to be able to drive it. I think that's a good piece of advice because when you're not driving it, when it's broken down, if it's in the shop for a while, if it's like waiting at your shop for a while to actually get to the front of the line, you're not driving it. You're not doing it. You're not doing your thing. And then you might as well not even have it. So,
and to be fair, I'm kind of being a condescending asshole in that I'm assuming that the buyer we're talking about does not yet, if ever, know how to do their own work.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're a mechanically inclined or a mechanical genius and you can buy some shit box, and your only expense is the parts, and you actually enjoy doing the work, and you're good at it, you can break even. but if you don't want to learn that, don't think you're going to go on YouTube and fix all these cars because...
Well, or at least just don't enter the equation thinking like, I'm going to be ahead because I spent so much less on the initial car. Like if you think of it as like, I'm buying a money pit. I want a hobby. I want to do something. I want to sink my time into this, but assume that just like, this will not be a good economics lesson. Basically.
Right. And actually, so hobbies cost money. Whether it's drinking beer or going to Cancun, hobbies cost money. Yeah. So if you're going to have an old car as a hobby, and here's the good news, this is a hobby that you can actually go buy groceries in.
Yeah.
True. You can take it out and have fun with it.
Try that with a model rocket.
Yes. Yeah, and it will cost you as you go, just like dinners out, just like expensive vacations, just like fireworks, just like whatever else you want to spend your money on. It costs you money. But the difference with a car, an old car, is that when you're done with it, you can still get some cash out of it when you sell it. You cannot do that with your vacation to Cancun. You cannot do that with your beer.
If you go see a concert, you can't later then sell that concert for later because you went to it. It was an experience. But I think Eric Bana is he's an Australian actor and apparently comedian too. He'd been in a bunch of different movies. In fact, he's been in a few of the modern Star Trek movies.
I've been told he's my doppelganger.
Yes,
a much more handsome.
I'm always thinking that. Yeah, he is. You do actually do have your face is actually similar.
Yeah, beautiful man though.
He is
way more beautiful than me.
The thing about Eric Bana is that he's been a big badass action star in a bunch of movies, but like apparently in Australia he's a stand up comedian. And I'm like,
cool.
I didn't know that.
I feel like it's like that's like the standard Australia sets. It's like even their stand up comedians can be like action stars in movies. But that's another
whole thing. Badass people.
Well, in the Crocodile Dundee era, they were. Now I think they're kind of becoming watered down. Maybe. Sorry, Australia, but now you're like America Light.
Shot fired at Chris Hemsworth, I guess. Yeah. he's a huge car guy, and he made an entire documentary about. He had a. It's one of the Australian muscle cars. I think it's a Ford Falcon. Don't quote me on that.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he was on the Ford side because they have in Australia they have this bizarro world where they have entrenched between GM and Ford.
A couple of these cars have shown up at the Conclave. Right?
Oh, that's cool.
Right?
That's cool. Yeah.
What is this 57 Chevy doing here? Well, it's
from Australia.
Oh, he's been going to the Conclave for years. Is that the guy we're talking about?
Yeah.
I've never known his name.
Well, this car.
I'm not sure. We'll go ahead and we'll leave that open.
It's not Eric Bana.
We'll leave that up for the possibility of the mystery that that's the case. But the point is, he has this Ford Falcon and he bought it when he was young and he and his friends were always working on this car and they call it their campfire. And that's what it is. He brings it, when they need to do something, he gets his friends from his old neighborhood. They're still together. They still hang out and they work on it. And it's the campfire because they get around it. They open up some beers, they work on it and they do stuff on it. Totally economically not making sense. He set it up for this Targa Tasmania rally race, and he absolutely stuffed it at one point. It was like it would have been like mechanically totaled because of the way he hit it.
But his friends all were like, you know, at this point he was a well-known actor.
Yeah.
He's well-known on the stage. And his friends were all like, no, we still want to work on it. We want to fix it. He brought it back and he fixed it. He
I got
it back
a solo life, stove so, over there. Yeah. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, shout out
yeah.
to the mechanic.
Can we go ahead and stuff this GT4 into a tree and then fix it?
I'll just take a mallet to the thing and see what happens. Shout out to our pal AJ down in Brisbane, by the way.
Yeah.
One of our few Australian listeners. We need more.
Yeah, we love the Australians. We love
each other. I'm sure he knows Eric Bana.
Yeah, I'm sure that. I think that's his uncle. In
hook
fact,
a brother
so,
up.
Yeah. So yeah. So
do we have to yell louder to get to Australia? Do we have to like get closer
to get the sound?
Really
to get
yell?
The sound out there? Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty
hello,
far.
Hello, Australian yeah. listeners. Yeah.
Good day. You have to say good day.
That hurt my ears.
How
man.
You dealing with those toilets going the wrong way? Vegemite, what else? Kangaroos.
Is the toilet thing true or is that a
I
myth?
Don't know. AJ, let us know. Let us
that
know.
Was one of the best Simpsons episodes where it's like, it's the toilet's
wait, that's
go the wrong way.
Science? What
yeah,
is
they
this?
Go they go the wrong way, and he was calling somebody up to ask about that. But then when they go to visit, they go to the U.S. Embassy, and they've spent this money to have this entire
so
contraption to make, it,
that.
To, make it go, to make it go the right way, and the guys are just like saluting it and crying, just like, God bless America.
That's brilliant. Yeah. All right, that's so, good television. So. You know what? And this was good podcasting tonight,
good
gentlemen.
Podcasting.
So
this is your bonus episode.
Yeah,
so
this, fun, what a bonus episode it was. Yeah. So, TEDx, thank you so much.
Oh, Mike, it was so fun. Doug, thank you. Guys. Yeah, really.
This was fun.
So, I'm Doug, Ryan. You're Ryan. Yeah. And that's the rest
our
of
bonus
the story.
Episode. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. All right, till next time, we're the steering committee.
Some things never change.
Hey, everybody, an old man's talking.
Grandpa's the name. Did you know this tree dates back to frontier times?
Wow.